It's me. It's the D-O-double-G, the road dog, Jesse James. And by my side, as always, is that B-A-double-D-A, double crooked letter, badass Billy Gunn. Together we are the New Age Outlaws. And you're listening to the VOC Nation. And if you ain't down with that, he's got two words for you. Suck it.
VOC Nation provides live daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with the hosts and guests by phone call, email, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include the legendary Ken Resnick, you probably remember from the AWA and WWE, former WCW performer, the Maestro, Wes Briscoe, who you probably remember from Impact, Brady Hicks, who you remember from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, former WWE and TNA star, Shelly Martinez, and former Philly radio personality, Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern, and of course, In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum, the Maestro. And by the way, both of these shows take callers live during the show. What are you waiting for? Go listen live right now at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all of our podcasts by searching for VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. Oh, and follow them on Twitter too, at VOC Nation.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of Talking Sass, and happy holidays to everybody who is out there celebrating. I hope that you have nothing but the best and happiest of holidays and continued blessings into the new year. And speaking of blessings, I just want to give a little shout out to Zach, who is a teenager here in the Montreal area, who I met a couple years ago. He has been commenting a lot on my YouTube, and I'm so excited to have him comment and get some engagement going. So props to you, Zach. And you know what? Be like Zach. Go to YouTube or your favorite podcast platform and subscribe. And that way you never miss a second of Talking Sass. You can also follow me on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Sassy Stuffy. Now tonight, this episode, we have two amazing guests. Of course, Dan Murphy is returning for our pro wrestling history lesson. And you know what? He gives us not one, but two. So tune in. Make sure you stay to the end so you get both of those, because they are great history lessons that I'm sure you guys are going to love. And some of you may even remember. But our first guest, she is a former Knockouts champion. She's a former two-time Knockouts tag team champion. She gets wild on Wednesdays. It is the one and only Taylor Wilde. Welcome back to Talking Sass. I am so excited today because my guest is a former TNA Knockouts champion, two-time TNA Knockouts tag team champion. She's a mama. She has her own podcast, which she gets wild on Wednesdays. This is Taylor Wilde. Hey, Taylor, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad to have you on the show finally.
Yes. Thank you for making it work. Our lives are crazy and you've been nothing but accommodating.
Well, like we were talking about earlier, like us being moms and podcasting and everything, really our schedule all depends on what the young ones are doing at that time.
Yeah. And I had like a great system where I was always doing my interviews when my son napped, because he used to be a great napper. So he'd be sleeping between like 1 and 3 and I could knock it out, send it off to my editor and be done. And they started dropping his nap. So then it got moved to after 8 o'clock, which was good, except on days after I work, which I work 24-hour shifts as a firefighter, and usually come 8 o'clock, like I'm ready for a glass of wine and turn my brain off, or my brain's just not working at all. So.
Oh, I can't blame you on that. Like, I couldn't imagine doing a job for 24 hours and then having to come home and take care of my little guy too. So more power to you. That's Thanks, amazing. No problem. So one of the first things I actually want to talk to you about is you had a very influential way in my wrestling career, even though we have never met.
Really?
Yes. So I'm taking you back probably, I'm guessing 2005-ish, maybe 2006. I was ring announcing for a while. And one of the pro wrestlers that I was on a lot of shows with was like, hey, why don't you actually train? Like, you like it. You seem to know what you're doing. Why don't you train? And I was, this epiphany just like went off. I was like, holy crap. I never even thought about it. I should. So I ended up going to a bunch of different shows, checking out where they had women's divisions. Cause I was like, I want to go somewhere where I'm going to actually have somebody that I can work on a regular basis. Cause then intergender wrestling really wasn't as big as it is now. So I went to OCW, which is Ohio Championship Wrestling. and it was Lexi Lane at the time versus Chantel Taylor. And I watched it and I was like, you know what? I know Lexi trains at OCW. This is the school that I'm going to pick because of that match.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. I was like, I can't wait to share this story with you. Cause I was like, like I said, we've never met. And I was like, I've always been in tune with women's wrestling, even like before I started wrestling. And I was like, So obviously I knew who you were. I knew. And like, when I saw you wrestle Lexi, I didn't know Lexi at the time either, which is now Madison Rayne, of course.
Right.
And, I was like, God, I was like, I want to train there. I was like, that's amazing. And then actually you were booked on like two or three shows for OCW, like in the future. And for some reason it never worked out that you actually got to come back in. So we never got to cross paths actually. So it was such a bummer.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. So we're part of each other's history.
Exactly. You know, in this small wrestling world that we call a family, it happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like I said, you have been around for a while. Like I said, I was very in tuned into the wrestling, in the women's wrestling side of things. And you debuted in 2003 at the age of 17. Now, most places that I go to or know about school-wise, you have to be 18 to actually train. So how did that work out for you?
When I turned 17, I actually went to a reputable school in Toronto where a lot of big names came out of. Edge and Christian, my trainer, Rob Fuego, Tracy Brooks, Gail Kim. But I came in at the latter end of their training years to the point where the original trainer, Ron Hutchinson, he wasn't actually training people anymore. Mm-hmm. He had a partner who was doing the training. Long story short, my parents had to sign off. If you're under 18, you all have to have a kind of meeting to make sure everyone's on the same page, that almost like a little mini psychological evaluation. And I started training. And I paid, well, my parents paid a ton of money for me to train infinitely, essentially. And 6 months later, they closed up their door, unbeknownst to us. And that was it. So I showed up at the school that did, like, they did a little bit of, you know, the foundation with me. Mm-hmm. But then I found Rob Fuego, who was running Squared Circle Training in Toronto. And it was the same sort of thing. I told them my sob story about Ron Hutchinson, who had trained my trainer originally. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, well, that's terrible. You obviously have a passion for it. Again, you're under 18, so we need your parents' consent. And my poor mother, you know, she supports everything I've ever done. But, you know, you can imagine it's not every mom's dream to have her little girl grow up to be a professional wrestler. But she still came in, she still signed on the dotted line, and that was essentially how that all happened. It was an open relationship. There was no secrets. It's not like I lied or anything or had a fake ID.
Oh, that's amazing. And going talking about mothers, my mom, like when I told her I was going to train to be a professional wrestler, she's like, okay, yeah, we'll see how long that lasts. And then like I stuck with it for like 13 years, and she was like, okay. But she was my biggest fan. Did your mom ever come to any of your shows when you were in Toronto?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Both my parents ended up being huge fans, but their fans are very different things. Like my father is a huge fan of the physicality. My mom is more a fan of like vignettes and promos and photo shoots and stuff like that. So she found her own way to love it.
Oh, that's amazing. See, my parents, when I was young, they went to WrestleMania 3 originally. So I was like a little kid. Yeah. So they were into it. It's always in my childhood. And then like, I didn't fall in love with it until I saw Sensational Sherry here with Shawn Michaels. But that was how I got, like, as a kid, that's like what really got me into it. But then like both my parents just kind of drifted away and I just kind of stayed with it. And like, I found independent wrestling around 12 years old and I was like, Mom, Dad, take me to the show. And they're like, what? Okay, sure.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you're a really young fan.
I did. And you know what? Like I said, like, you know, I'm not actively wrestling now. I was like, but I'm still like, I'll always be a fan. Like, right. even though I know the inside outs of the business now, I'll always just be a fan, like, no matter what happens.
And how do you feel about your son in wrestling? Would you allow him to be a wrestler?
Me, I say yes. My husband, on the other hand, he was also in the business, and he's like, I don't think so.
Well,
so it's funny because you would expect the mom to be more of the side, like, I don't know. But no, yeah. me, I'm like, if that's what he wants to do, sure. I had a blast with him. My husband had a blast too, but he's just like, I don't know if I want him to be involved in everything in the business that, you know, you see and you,
right.
you know, may go down that dark rabbit hole. For me, I never did that. You know, I was never into the drugs and all that kind of stuff that you can see sometimes. But for me, I rarely saw that. I don't know. Other people, who knows? Maybe I was just working the right promotions, I guess. I don't
know. You were working the right promotions. Let's keep it there. That's good. I'm glad you had that experience.
Well, not that I didn't ever see anything. I did.
Yeah.
But I wasn't something that, I don't know, I guess interested me.
Right. No. I hear you.
To each their own.
Yes. To each their own.
Yeah. So when you started wrestling, you went to developmental with WWE. And I listened to your podcast with Chrissy Vane and some of your other ones. And that wasn't exactly the best of times from what I understand.
Oh, my God. I can't judge what the system is now because it sounds like it's very, very different and for the better. When we were there, it was an extension of the Divas era. Their focus was on the models and then hiring models and then turning them into wrestlers, and the female wrestlers that they had, they basically treated like dog shit. Yes. we had our purposes. We were there to wrestle, and if we got to, you know, the main roster, it was like we were just lucky, but it felt like for the most part we were there as like a talent enhancement, for lack of a better term. We were there to train the girls that didn't slug it out on the indies. So it created this real divide. And, you know, looking back, we were also young and protective of the business. And, you know, we'd made it that far. So we wanted to make it, and we felt this major injustice. So that in itself caused an unhealthy locker room environment. And then just the actual treatment of women was absolutely like unfathomable in 2020. Like, we had to weigh in every week, which in itself is archaic because weight is not even indicative of health. Like,
right.
if you know yourself as a woman, if you're 2 to 3 pounds heavier from, you know, week to week, maybe you're on your period, maybe you ate a burrito, maybe like. And you would have to give an explanation to why you weighed more. And if you weighed less, it was like, woo, bring out the like marching band. Like, there were just some, the discrimination. It's not like the guys had to weigh in.
Right.
But what I will say, as I've always experienced in professional wrestling amongst the women, we band together, we make it work, and we have, can I swear on this podcast?
Of course. It's the internet.
We had a fucking blast. You know, we were a family. Even though we got under each other's skin and, you know, we fought in the ring and outside the ring, at the end of the day, we accumulated amazing stories.
Definitely. And that's like I tell people, like, the best thing about wrestling is not necessarily like being in the ring. It's like the stuff that happens with like the people that you surround yourself with outside of the ring, like either, you know, writing 2 shows or, you know, going to dinner afterwards or whatever the case, like you end up forming these amazing bonds with people.
Yeah. And that was kind of the beautiful thing that came from my podcast Wild Bond, as I started it to showcase my girlfriend, because so many of us are, of course, we're these badass female wrestlers, but there's so much more to us. We're academics, we're moms, we're intuitive healers, we're musicians and artists, and that information isn't available. Like, you know, our wikis just state like where we're from, where we've wrestled, like nothing more. There's so much more substance. But it also ended up kind of turning into this live audible biography where I got to walk down memory lane. And even though I haven't spoken to a lot of these girls in 10 years, you know, they're still very much my sisters. It's like nothing's changed. And, you know, we get to recall all these silly, ridiculous things like sleeping in a bathtub in Ireland or, you know, that. You've heard some of the stories, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. I listened to quite a few. And that, you know, I started my podcast, like, I didn't want it to be just women's wrestling, but like wrestling in general and even entertainment. Like, if there's somebody that I know and yeah. I'll ask them to come on the show. But like, it's just fun to like walk down memory lane, like you said. And like, there's a lot of people that I've had on as well, too, that I'm just like, man, I forgot about that story. And it's just, it's so much fun because you get to show, like, okay, yeah, there is the dark side, but there's also this fun, amazing side that a lot of people don't get to hear about because most of the time the negative stuff is what's going to get the attention from everybody anyway.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's really great. Like, people are like, oh, everybody has a podcast, but I think it's great that people are podcasting because we are in this time in the world that we've never experienced. Like, our generation has never experienced anything traumatic. We've never lived through a war. We've never lived through a depression, but here we are in a pandemic and we're forced to stay inside. We're, you know, a lot of us are forced to work from home. We need creative outlets and people need a break from the constant stress of what's going on in the world. So we're providing entertainment, but it's also cathartic for us. So I think it's this really great, exciting movement.
I agree. Like, my husband actually pushed me to start my podcast and I was like, oh, okay, you know, it'll be fun. So I did. And now I'm like, man, like, I like shooting like 2 or 3 interviews a week. Like, I'm a month ahead of time usually because I'm just like, I'm just like, I want to go and talk to so-and-so today because I haven't talked to them in, you know, 6 years since I moved to Canada. And I'm like, oh, this is so much fun. And it's another way that I can connect with human beings while still being in my house and sharing these great stories.
Right. And I think the great thing about podcasts are they're like a, it's like people, it's like a voyeuristic experience. Like, you're listening to two friends or, you know, social acquaintances have this intimate conversation and you get to be a part of it. So I find it's probably really comforting. Like, I've become a big fan of podcasts now that I have my own podcast. It wasn't really the other way around.
That's the same. My husband, when I first started, he's like, you need to start listening to podcasts. And I was like, but I don't really have time. And now that I do, I sit at home while I'm working. I just throw on some headphones and I listen to a podcast while I'm working. And I'm like, oh, wow. You know, like, I really enjoy this or this person or this person, or like, oh, hey, look, I'm going to interview, you know, Taylor Wilde this week. Let me listen to all of her podcasts. Or, oh, hey, she was just on this. Let me listen to her on this. Like, it's amazing. Like, I just love that there's, I now have time to like sit down and enjoy people that I either grew up or I know or whatever, talking and enjoying everything. And it's just amazing because it's such a negative time in the world anyway.
Agreed. Fully agreed.
So let's go back and talk more about being in TNA, because after WWE, you went to TNA and here you become, you know, a Knockouts champion and also the 2-time Knockouts champion or Knockouts tag champion. Sorry. But what was amazing that I didn't know when I did my research is you were the first person to be able to hold those titles. Like, you were the Knockouts champion and then the Knockouts tag team champions. You were the first person that held both of those titles.
Yeah, I was the first. Sarah, Sarita and I were the first ever Knockouts tag champions. And yeah, so I guess, I haven't thought of it that way. I guess so. Wow.
See, you're learning new things about yourself.
Go me, woo!
But I mean, that's pretty, I mean, people got to have a lot of faith in you to put their championship on you. And then you're the first ever, like you said, TNA Knockouts tag team champions. I mean, that's got to be a lot of responsibility for you to hold within a company.
Yeah, for sure. When I came out of WWE, it was a bit of a disillusioned phase, right? Because I had been working towards this for so long and then it kind of just went meh. And, you know, they released me and they had nothing for me. They wished me the best of my future endeavors. And I thought, oh, fuck it. Well, I guess that's it then, because that's what I had been working towards. So I enrolled back into university and I thought I was just going to be a regular civilian and live my life. And then 6 months later, things, the stars aligned, and I ended up getting hired by TNA. And it was a challenging time to become into the division because they had just hired 13 knockouts in that span of time. And it was that really exciting time in the knockouts when they were, for the first time ever, they were featuring two women's matches on the show, multiple vignettes, the storylines were thick with women. And here I was coming in, this girl that was, you know, relatively unknown. And I just kind of like swooped in there and I was taking the title from Awesome Kong. So I do know now that I've been able to talk to the girls, in hindsight, there were a lot of people that had a lot of faith in me, which was cool. I don't think I knew the amount of pressure that was on me because I was just like, all right, this is my chance. This is what I was working for. Let's show them what I can do. And it was sink or swim, and thank God.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I swear.
Definitely, because at that time, I mean, we're talking WWE was still kind of still in the diva phase, of course. So, you know, they're not really featuring the women as much. And that knockout, I mean, the knockouts locker room has always been stacked, in my opinion. There's never been a time where I went like, I don't care. No, it's always super talented women's wrestlers. And even if they're not great women's wrestlers, they're trying to advance. They're trying to work to be better and stuff like that. So it's like, there's never been a downtime for the knockouts, in my opinion.
I agree. TNA and now Impact has always had a real soft spot in my heart because I was part of that like OG TNA knockouts movement where, you know, arguably that phase changed the trajectory of women's wrestling. Like,
definitely.
On the independents, WWE, AEW, like, it you know, it really set a new bar. And over the past 10 years, even though for a few years I wasn't watching wrestling, I am astounded by the level of talent in the women's divisions everywhere, but especially on Impact. Like, it is deep and vast, and women are good now, and not just good for women, good. And it's so exciting to see. And then we have this whole new thing of women headlining shows and these intergender storylines. Like, it's very exciting. And if I feel like I've left at all a little mark on the history of women's wrestling, I'm so thankful I got to be a part of that time in TNA because it was a fucking blast.
And that's beautiful, because like I said, you said, you know, the OGs, and it was, but like, it's TNA to me, or Impact now, has always kind of been on the cusp of the future of what women's wrestling is going to lead into, besides Shimmer, of course, because Shimmer, I love Shimmer, and like, God bless them for everything that they've done. But like, the intergender matches and stuff that, you know, Impact's doing now, where like Tessa Blanchard was champion, you have Jordynne Grace, and you have all these women that are even wrestling in men's matches and becoming champions. Yeah. Like, WWE is eventually going to have to see this and be like, well, we're going to have to do something. I mean, they do every once in a while. Like, you mentioned Awesome Kong earlier. She was in the Royal Rumble. Beth Phoenix been in the Royal Rumble. But there's going to have to be, I think, more interaction and lead more towards a more PG-13 era of wrestling than what the WWE has been in. Because right now, I mean, the men and the women still aren't even touching, which is crazy. And
I don't know, but I don't know if that would ever happen in WWE. If it would, I could see it being like a campy sort of like silly storyline, but there's just still so much brother men's world over there. And the women, there are some really talented women, especially in NXT. Oh my God, there are some really amazing women in NXT. And I just got an Android box and I'm able to catch up now because we don't get to watch NXT in Canada. I don't know about Montreal, but I don't.
They have it on, I think it's Sportsnet, but it's like a week and a half, like after it's already played. So like, I'm like, I don't really bother watching it because of that reason. Like, okay, I've already read the results online. I don't really, unless somebody's like, oh my God, this match was spectacular. You have to see it. Then I'm like, okay, then I'll go watch it. But, and it's only an hour here too, so it's like they take the 2-hour show and condense it. So like, there was one time where I love Mercedes Martinez and it was her debut on NXT and I'm like, I can't wait till next week because like, I'm gonna watch it because I love Mercedes. And then like, they show it and there wasn't Mercedes match and I was like, oh well, that's a like little heart in the dagger there, or dagger in the heart, because that's what I wanted to watch, you know. I read all the spoilers on everything else.
Oh, in Canada. This is my home. I love it. But man, we are so behind with certain things.
Certain things, yes. But hey, we have free healthcare. That's the best thing since moving from the States to Canada. That is the best thing. Like, I ever. Bet
that's like a new world for you. Like, just a huge stress off of you.
Yeah. Well, I've been here for 6 years. And for me, like, even still, like, I'm like, I feel a cold coming on. I'm like, no, I'm not going to go to the doctor. My husband's like, why don't you just go to the doctor? I'm like, no, because in the States, like, just go to the doctor, it's astronomical. You know what I mean? So like, I still have that mentality a bit because I'm like, oh, should I? Shouldn't I? I don't know.
I know. It's glad that you're here and you can just go. Everyone should have that luxury.
Well, lucky for me, I haven't been too sick or hurt or anything and needed too much. But if I do, I can definitely go. And like, well, I'm sure maybe you can even attest, like when I was pregnant, like going to the doctor was like a breeze. Like, but if I were in the States, like, cause I have a heart murmur, which doesn't factor into my everyday life at all. But during my pregnancy, it did. And going to the States, if I would have had to go do those extra tests that I would have had that I did here, I'd still be in debt for like the next 15 years just because of that. And it's crazy, like, to think of it that way for me anyway.
I don't ignorance is bliss. I've been, even though I lived in the States and I worked in the States for many years, I always resided here or I lived in the States for short spans. And I always thought to myself, if anything really happened, like anything really bad happens, I'm going to come home. Mm-hmm. I do not understand how women afford to have babies in the States. Like, I've looked at the charts and I'm just like, how is that possible? How?
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. It is. And I feel bad for like friends of mine and stuff that have had kids. Cause I'm just like, I don't even know how you can afford anything after having a child and not being afforded these luxuries that we have here in Canada and stuff like that. I mean, we could go on a tangent about that for like another like 2 or 3 episodes alone.
That's true.
But going back to the Knockout. So you said you've been watching the product in the last couple of years, right? What do you think about the return of the TNA Knockouts? Well, I guess not TNA, rather, but the Impact Knockout tag team titles.
It's exciting. It's so exciting. I'm a big fan of the diversification of women's wrestling. And I think that's been the biggest element change in the past 10 years is getting out of the Divas era and not just having sexy blonde versus sexy brunette. We have characters, like actual characters that are, you know, marketed as larger than life, like the men, and incorporating tag wrestling is just another diversification, giving women's careers longevity and giving the audience a snapshot into how much more women wrestlers are capable of. You know, we've come so far from the 5 or 6 minute fluff matches, and I'm so excited to see what the Knockouts are going to bring to the tag division 10 years after I had started it, because it was in its infancy. And, you know, when I was there, we did our best, but talent was different then, and we were just growing. So now women's wrestling is so much more vast and diverse, and the talent level skyrocketed. So I'm very excited to see what they're going to do with those tag tournaments. I've been thoroughly enjoying it. I'm a big fan.
Me too. I have actually Nevaeh, which tags with Jessica Havoc there. Her and I have tagged before, and like, I know she's like a tag team specialist. Like, that's something she excels in. And I'm just like, I'm so excited that like she has like this avenue to show, like, with tags being more, you know, I guess a spotlight more on tag team wrestling for women now, because she's just brilliant in there. And not taking away from any of the other teams. That's just because I personally tagged with her. All the teams are absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, I'm eating it up. Cause like, it's such for me when I see like people that I know, especially excelling, and like, I know pretty much, not all the girls, but I know a majority of them. And I'm just like, oh, I'm so happy for them. Like, it like warms my heart, you know, because it's just like, yes,
yeah,
show what
that's
you can
how I
do
feel too. Yeah, it's really, really cool. I always talk about how wrestling ebbs and flows and what's in vogue, and, you know, what's popular changes every few years. And I would say right now is probably the most comparable as it was 10 years ago. We're bringing all what's old is new, and it's really exciting. So I'm interested to see where we're going.
Amazing. So now after TNA, I mean, I think you did a little bit of independent dates, didn't you? Or did you retire pretty much right away after you left TNA?
So I retired, and then I had a farewell match. Forgive me, I don't remember the promotion. It was in San Francisco against cheerleader Melissa and her husband's promotion. So I had like this farewell match, and then I was training a group of women for roughly about a year at the Squared Circle where I had trained. And I trained Noof, who is Aaliyah on NXT. I gave her start, as well as the bubblegum princess, Alexia Nicole. Yeah. And there was a bunch of other really wonderful girls, but I guess it just, you know, sometimes it sticks, sometimes it doesn't.
And as they say, it's not for everybody.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Not for the faint of heart.
No, definitely.
Or the same.
So true.
Yeah. And then I was just on to the next chapter. And then I thought, okay, well, what makes me just as excited as wrestling made me? And I always knew I wanted to work in the emergency services. Mm-hmm. Actually, when I was 12, I told my parents, I want to join the military. That is what I want to do. That's what I'm going to do. And both of my parents were horrified, as you can imagine, that their little girl wants to be a gun-toting army person. So they kind of persuaded me to explore other options. But I deeply soul-searched, and I looked into police and paramedicine and firefighting. And firefighting was just the one that spoke to me. And I went to college for it, and I took, God, I don't know, 50 additional certificates in like emergency rescue, like ice water rescue and high angle rescue, and all these crazy additional courses to pad my resume. And it took me about 4 years of like aggressive application. And then I finally got hired as a full-time firefighter.
That's amazing. Cause like, I remember listening to your podcast where you said like, you went back to college, you went for psychology, you got a BA yeah. in psychology as well. You volunteered at a women's shelter at one point as well. Yeah. And you basically said you were this misfit nomad with zero resume after wrestling. So here you are just trying in a short period of time to just add everything you can to that resume.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It was a dark time because I never associated myself with being famous, because famous in the wrestling world is very different than being famous in Hollywood per se.
Definitely.
So I never felt like I had to remove myself, but there was a little bit of a weirdness becoming a civilian again, for lack of a better term. But I've always, I like to believe I've always been pretty humble. So I needed a job immediately. And I just literally applied everywhere, retail, crappy office jobs, whatever. And I ended up, my first job, I think, was like at Forever 21, setting up a shop, like building like the racks and create, like building the models and all that, like just construction type mm-hmm. stuff. And I was like, what have I become? 25 years old. I used to be on TV and I'm in Forever 21 building fucking mannequins. What am I doing? Yeah.
That's quite a difference.
It was pretty humbling. But it made me hungry. Instead of like sitting around and going like, I used to be someone and now I'm no one. It was like, no. I consciously chose to leave wrestling because mm-hmm. I was burnt out and I wanted something else. So yeah, I just threw myself into the deep end, and I'm such a different person because of it. Mentally, physically, I'm so much happier. Oh my God, I'm so much happier.
Yeah.
And now that I'm happy and my world is normal, now I'd like to get back into wrestling and fuck it all up.
Well, yeah, because I remember you were actually set to return this year in March before the pandemic hit. So if, let's say, the pandemic somehow vanishes tomorrow, are you ready to step back in the ring very soon?
Girl, I'm ready. I'm ready. No, truth be told, because I was geared to go in March, I've got fresh, new, exciting gear. I've been doing things I never did before. I've been working on who Taylor Wilde 2.0 is, and I'm back. There's a wonderful training facility in Toronto in Liberty Village called Superkick that is run by Chris Chambers, which is a guy that I trained with when I first started out a million years ago, and now he owns the wrestling school, which makes me feel very old. But I'm there at least once a week for 2 to 3 hours, and at first it was like, okay, I'm 34, not 24. I feel this. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm physically a lot stronger than I was 10 years ago, because I used to train for aesthetic appeal. Like mm-hmm. I trained to be thin and look a certain way, and I ate a certain way, and I wouldn't say it was the healthiest mentally and physically. And then all my training changed to functional training, because I have to lift people out of burning buildings, and I have to run up 6 flights of stairs wearing an extra 100 pounds on my back. So everything is really different in the ring now. And I actually dare to say I feel better, and I'm just as flexible, and I got to put the time into my body to massage and physio. And so, yeah, like I feel really great. So yes, if all the stars align again, bet your ass, I am ready to go again. Need to push the button.
So let's say that, you know, you don't have an opportunity, say, with one of the bigger companies, but like some of the independents, maybe even like a Shimmer, like I said earlier, because I know Dave Prazak would probably love to have you back on the roster. But would that be an option for you as well? Like, are you looking maybe even independent dates?
I am open to anything. But like I said, with the way the world is right now, because I'm in Canada, you cannot travel unless you are essential. And the only way I could be essential is if I had an American work visa, which costs money and requires a major company. So
makes
like
sense.
I said, I'm not turning my back on anything. I am always open-minded.
That's fantastic, because I would love to see what Taylor Wilde 2.0 would be, because like I said, I loved, like, I hated that we never got to actually cross paths like in the ring, but I like loved watching what I did know of you beforehand, and then obviously with the match with Lexi, and then moving forward. So I would love to see what that had in store for you, because that would be amazing.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That it's a little bit of positive reinforcement. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, even though, like I said, you've been gone, you retired over 10 years ago now, but like there's still people, much like myself, that still remember who Taylor Wilde was in TNA. They remember Chantel Taylor from your independent days. They remember, you know, knowing that you were a WWE developmental. Like, people still know that. And I think, like, with you doing Wilde on and you having the caliber guests that you have a lot of times as well, people that maybe didn't know of you at that time, or maybe like teenagers now who, you know, don't remember wrestling because they were like, you know, two or three, they're going to pick up on, you know, things like this, you know, like, oh, she wrestled too. Let me go back. And the great thing about growing up now is you have YouTube and you can go back and check out all that stuff.
Yeah, like, you're totally right.
Yeah. When I was a young kid, like, my big thing was I love Sensational Sherry, but I couldn't go back and watch Sensational Sherry stuff unless I went and found a VHS that she was on, you know. But now I'm like, this is golden, because I can go back and look at so much stuff on YouTube of hers, and it's amazing. So, and they can do the same thing with you.
Oh, you're right. Yes. Watch Taylor Wilde. Watch Sassy Sassy. Look your girls up. We're important. Respect your elders.
That's right. See, I always say, like, I would love to come back, and I'm around the same age as you are. And I'm like, but I just had a kid. I'm like, I'd like to have another one. And then I'm like, if I have another one, by the time like my body and everything's ready to come back, I'm going to be 40. And I'm like, I don't really know if there's a place in wrestling for a 40-year-old woman to come make a return, but you never know. I'm just saying it's most likely not going to happen.
Yeah,
but I would still love it too.
Keep an open mind, because it is a different world. If this was 10 years ago, no, there's no room for a 40-year-old woman. Mm-hmm. There hadn't been.
Yeah.
Whereas now the options are endless. You know, it doesn't have to be in a wrestling role. You could take all your knowledge and be a producer or an agent or a writer, or who knows, a podcaster for a major company. And you know, the possibilities are endless. So keep an open mind. I don't know. I can't figure it out either. I don't know if I want more babies, or I don't want more babies, or I'm old or not. I don't know. I'm trying to go with it.
Yeah. Cause at this age, you really don't have, like, especially with wrestling, you don't really have like, okay, it's not impossible. Like, maybe 10 years ago, a 35 to 40-year-old woman wouldn't have a chance. But now there's definitely the chance. I mean, look, Jazz is in TNA right now, or Impact. They keep calling it TNA. Impact now. You have, you know, all these women, like Shayna Baszler is a bit older. I know that. I don't know her exact age. But I know, like, people that are making, like, their WWE, you know, currently right now, just killing it. And they're in their late 30s probably, or even older. So it's amazing what, you know, the time has changed. So I never say never. Yeah, right.
Never say.
So more things that I want to talk to you about is, I found your Halloween episode to be amazing, because you did like this witches and all this stuff. And like, I felt so in tune with it, because I am huge. I used to go personally and do ghost hunts. And I've had so many experiences, and I'm like, All the guests that you had on talking about their different experiences, I was like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. Cause when, like, let's say 5-6 years ago, when I would tell people this, they'd be like, you are weird. And I'm like, yeah, what? It's ghost hunting, man. It's so much fun. You know, it's a different kind of adrenaline and stuff too.
Yeah.
People are just like, okay, sure. And now it's a little bit more mainstream, I guess, but it's still kind of weird for people to be like, oh yeah, I like to go to abandoned hospitals and prisons and just sit and wait and see what happens.
Totally. I'm like, you and I are kindred spirits. And I think after doing that episode, especially, cause that was kind of like you said, it's more mainstream, but it's still like, you know, you put that out in the world, people are going to judge you. And to the point in my life where I don't give a shit. I am doing me. I am happy. This is who I am. If you think I'm weird, you either own it or move on.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Like, I love the paranormal. I love the occult. I love having the shit scared out of me. Normal, right?
Well, see, as anything in real life, yes. But like, if you expect me to watch a horror movie, I'm like, nah, nah, I'm good.
Really?
Yeah, I'm like, I'll pass. But see, that's I also hilarious. Like, with like the witchcraft and everything that you guys were talking about on that specific episode, I went to a ghost hunt. It was in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and this is probably 10 or so years ago, and there was an occult shop that was down the street, and the lady actually came to this place that we were doing our ghost hunt at, and she was giving us like different types of herbs and spices and stuff that she had mixed together with a little poem, and it was amazing because it was basically like, I'm coming in and I'm going to respect you. I wish that you would do the same with me. So it was like, I've never had an episode where I've gone somewhere and I've had something negative happen to me. Like you see like these people that are like, oh, I got scratched or I got punched. My things have always been extremely positive. Like there was one time I did the show Ghost Adventures. I did a convention with them, and we actually did a ghost hunt with them in the Ohio State Reformatory, which is actually if you like the movie Shawshank Redemption, this is the same prison. It was filmed.
Oh,
there.
Wow.
Yeah. So they set us up in these cells, and we're like 10 cells apart from everybody else. You know, you're not like right on top of each other because you don't want the noise to really like cause any kind of difficulties. So I'm sitting there. I had my voice recorder on and all this stuff, and I'm sitting there, and it's just this chain bed. It's so uncomfortable, but you're in there for like a half hour. It's freaky as all get out because it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't hear anything at that time. But like at the end of the thing, when I went back and listened to my voice recorder at the end where you hear, okay, everybody, please come out of your cells. The whatever being was with me was like, thank you. And it was like this deep, manly voice. And there was nobody else around me. I was actually on the end. So like to hear that, I was like, oh, how am I in a prison? And I got the nice ghost.
You had the polite ghost.
Yeah. So like, it's crazy because there's been a lot of stories that happen there where people have hung themselves from the cell blocks and stuff like that. So like, I was like, how do I get the polite one? I've been hugged before too. And like, so like, I've always went in with the poem that she had. I kind of made it to my own liking where like, I'm coming in to respect you and to learn about you. If you would like me to learn about you, please make your presence known to me. And I've never had anything negative happen.
I think there's something huge to that because I think like, I do love the paranormal. I love the occult. I love counterculture, but a part of it wasn't a choice. Like I was always really intuitive as a kid. I always had issues with like seeing things, hearing things. And like my parents always just shrugged it off as, oh, she's just, you know, being a kid, being silly. Mm-hmm. So as I aged, I kind of just blocked it out. But I've always had a huge respect for like cemeteries. And when with my job, I'm always dealing with the dead. And whether I say it out loud or I think it myself, I always am doing that same kind of mantra. Like this is out of respect. I'm sorry for your loss. I'm sorry for your pain. You're not alone. You're loved. And I haven't had negative experiences, but I may have had experiences with ghosts who were not pleased. I've had a lot of issues. Like there's a fire hall near High Park in Toronto, and it used to be a jail in like the 1800s, and the cells were in the basement where the gym is, and it's basically like a little they still have the hayloft in the top of the barn. Like it's so old.
Oh, wow.
And I was sleeping. It was like, you know, the death hour or whatever. It was like 2 a.m. And I thought one of the guys were fucking with me. All of a sudden, I was in a starfish on my face sleeping. And I thought somebody was pushing me into the mattress. Like standing on my bed and putting all their force and pushing me into the mattress to the point where I like giggled. I was like, okay, fuck off. Like, you know, sometimes we screw around the hall, we throw toilet paper at each other when we're sleeping or whatever. And then I looked in my peripheral and I was like, no one's standing on the bed. No one's standing on the bed. What the fuck?
Yeah.
There's just like pressure on me and I couldn't move. I was like totally paralyzed. And that's not the first time that's happened to me in my sleep. So now I'm really into like smudging and saging and like cleansing my areas. And I know we sound totally bonkers, but there's no way that this many people have so many similar stories. And all we are balls of energy, and that energy has to go somewhere. So that's my belief system when it comes to ghosts.
Same here. And for those who are hearing crazy little sounds in the background, apparently my son has not taken his nap today, so it's not ghosts. If you're hearing any background noise, because I can hear them running around upstairs and dropping things. So just so you know, no paranormal stuff happening at this moment on Talking Sass. We're just talking about it.
Sounds like an episode of Wild On. My child sounds like he's locked in the closet half the time screaming. So it's cool.
Well, he's not screaming at least, but I can, likes for some reason taking Christmas tree bulbs off the tree and just dropping them. So I'm sure that's probably what he's doing now.
Yeah. I hope they're all plastic.
Most of them. Yeah. The ones that I don't want anything to happen to are higher on the tree where he can't reach them. Smart, so it's funny. Move. Yeah. The bottom of the tree looks kind of barren, and then like the top, everything's like crammed in there, but you know, it happens.
Beautiful.
Another thing that I wanted to talk to you about as well, because I was like, wow, I have so much in common with you that I didn't expect besides the wrestling part of it, was you posted some pictures the other day of, I'm guessing it was your wall, where it says Queens, respecting Queens, and you had like Gwen Stefani and RuPaul. And another big thing that like I find that I'm really deep in tune with is the LGBTQ community. And I love RuPaul's Drag Race. I am a huge fan. So I'm guessing because she was on your wall, you also are a big fan of the Drag Race.
Oh God, I love Drag Race. I don't even know where to begin with Drag Race. Like, so in the 90s when RuPaul did Supermodel, that big hit, I was completely infatuated with her. Like, I was so young that I didn't really understand that she was a man. But I just thought she was so strikingly beautiful and confident and amazing. So like from a young age, I was completely infatuated with her. And then when I was young, like 16, 17, I started hanging out in the, call it the gayborhood, the LGBTQ area of Toronto. I started hanging out at the nightclubs there, and I really learned about drag culture firsthand, and I realized how freeing it was and how open and loving and fun. And then when Drag Race came out, I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever, because I don't like American Idol, I don't really like Amazing Race, I'm not really into reality TV, but you give me a show of drag queens, yes. And when they did Canada's Best Drag Race.
Oh, see, I don't get that in Montreal. I don't have Crave. So I have yet to see it, but I will eventually get to it. Because I love Brooklyn Heights too, by the way. She's amazing.
Ooh, amazing.
But yes. When things calm down again and we're allowed to have big crowds of people, you have to come to Montreal for Pride, because they do a free drag show every year. Last year, they had like 25,000 people. And it's all RuPaul's Drag Race queens mixed in with a few local queens from here. And I'm sure Canada's Drag Race will also join that the next time they're able to perform this. It is amazing. 25,000 people in a big park, just like loving each other, having a great time, being entertained. It's, to me, it's like the most beautiful thing in the world. Every time I go, I'm just so in love with the whole situation.
Sign me up. Yeah, me and my girlfriends went to Pride for years until we had World Pride in Toronto, and it was just too crazy. Like, it was too insane. And then now I don't do crowds, but I could do that.
Yeah, it's like, if you try to go up front, obviously you're like packed like sardines, but if you're in the back, it's more spread out, and you're just, they have big screens everywhere so that you can see what's going on. Like last year, I remember my friend's mom went with us, because she's entertained by it as well. And she kind of like sat on the side, like in some picnic area. And like, we just found like a nice little area where we actually sat on the grass and watched it on like a big screen for a while. It was amazing. Such a great thing. Hey everybody, just wanted to take a minute to tell you about my friend and big supporter of the show, apparel line Ruddy Lad. My wardrobe is filled with these t-shirts. They're so comfortable, and I am not the only one who feels this way. You can find celebrities enjoy them too. Everyone from WWE's Big E, Sheamus, Ronda Rousey and Travis Brown, UFC icon Chuck Liddell and Conor McGregor's training team, to the Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, Bono from U2, Phil X from Bon Jovi, and actors too, such as Chad Michael Murray, and so many more. Ruddy Ladd was also featured on Dragon's Den on Netflix. So head over to ruddyladd.com, help support them, and make sure, raise some proper mischief. So I know it's very hard to pick a queen from RuPaul's Drag Race. I mean, there's, like I said, there's so many of them. But if you can narrow it down.
I'm going to go with Cher Needles because she was the first spooky queen. Mm-hmm. And Alaska because, oh my God, the way she talks, just I die laughing. And she's so weird looking and bizarre, but beautiful at the same time. And they're just both total freaks. And they own it, and it works for them.
And that's, like I said, I love RuPaul. And, you know, you've actually had on your podcast, which is something I want to talk about, a lot of LGBT people like Sunny Kiss. You've had Jamie on as well. I mean, let's talk a little bit about your podcast before we wrap this up so that everybody knows where they can go and find you.
Yes. Wild On is available on any major podcast platform. So your Spotify, Apple Music. Its main base is on Anchor. So if you go to anchor.com, just type in Wild On. That's where you'll find me. And we upload a new episode every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
That's right, because you get Wild on Wednesdays.
Wild on Wednesdays. Thank you for the tagline.
No problem. Well, tell everybody if you have your social media where they can find you and also if you have like any merchandise that you want to talk about at all.
Yes, absolutely. So you can find me on both Twitter and Instagram at Real Taylor Wild. That's Wild with an E. And I do have some t-shirts up on Pro Wrestling Tees. So it's just Taylor Wild t-shirt store. We've got some really fun 80s designs as well as just some specific Wild On t-shirts. So if you're looking for Christmas presents, go get your own Taylor Wild Wild On t-shirt.
All right. Fantastic. Everybody, please make sure you go check out Wild On with Taylor Wild. Make sure you follow her on social media. And it's been such a blessing to have you. And I can't wait. Maybe we'll do another one once you get back on the wrestling horse and get things going there.
That would be really great. And I'll try not to have a screaming toddler in the background.
No worries. Like I said, it's a life being a mama. Hey guys, once again, we have our segment with Dan Murphy coming up. And I'm so excited because he is in the festive mood, just like myself. And also on top of that, just last week, he had a virtual signing for his new book, The Thing in the Water. And I'm so excited to have him on. We could talk about that as well. So everybody put your hands together for Dan Murphy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Merry Christmas. Like you said, I'm feeling a little festive. I have my beard balls going and the hat. And I don't have the nice exotic, tiger skin, leopard skin fur that you've got going on. But ho, ho, ho.
I got the little Carol Baskins thing going on here from that's the thing of the year, right?
That's it. Yeah, that's totally it. Very nice.
So what's going on for the month of December? Well, first, let's talk about your book signing for the month of December, because that was pretty awesome last week.
Thank you. Yeah, I've done a few books on Western New York history and obviously my wrestling books, Sisterhood of the Squared Circle, and I've got a couple stories from that. I want to go with two quick things today that happened in December. So I'm in a giving mood like Santa Claus. I'm going with a double. But I wrote my first novel that came out really September, but I kind of stopped it and re-released it because I had to fix a couple things in it. But it's out now. It's on Amazon. It is called The Thing in the River. This is a copy. So feel free to look it up on Amazon. Basically kind of a horror story thriller about a thing, a being, an entity, whatever it may or may not be, that lives in the Niagara River that may be responsible for basically, you know, all of the suicides of people over Niagara Falls, everything throughout history, that this thing may have been responsible for that. Or the person who thinks it is might slowly be losing his mind. And that's kind of the story. And he has to figure out whether or not this thing really exists or it doesn't and where it goes from there. So,
Love that.
Thank you. A lot of people have compared it to like the Mothman prophecies. So if you kind of like the cryptids or a cult, or not a cult, but the cryptids and kind of mystery thriller, this would kind of appeal to you, hopefully.
I love, like, little side fun fact. I love cryptozoology and all that kind of like fun, is this a real creature or not thing. Oh, I love it. So yeah, definitely be into that.
Same with me. So I had that in my mind when I kind of wrote this. So yeah, you'll enjoy it.
I can't wait.
Okay. But that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about history. We're talking about December. And I mentioned I've got two items here. So first one, and these are both fairly recent history. I remember both of them occurring myself. First one, December 28th, 1984. Does that date seem familiar to you? Does it make you
not any idea? Not to age myself, but I was only 9 months old, so.
That's about what I figured. Yeah, I know. Okay. So you make me feel bad because I remember this happening, but this was the WWF's Christmas show at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. And what they did for that show was they brought in Dick Clark to give a special achievement award to Cyndi Lauper. Cyndi Lauper had been the manager for Wendy Richter for the past year, was really kind of the integral part of the whole rock and wrestling connection that got the WWF on MTV and really kind of got it introduced to a whole new national audience that the WWF had never had. But at that event, Cyndi Lauper gets the award from Dick Clark. She presents an award to the WWF, which is given to Hulk Hogan and Wendy Richter. Hogan and Wendy Richter leave the ring afterwards, and she calls out Captain Lou Albano, presents him with a gold record and recognition of all that he had done for MS research. This is when Rowdy Roddy Piper and Cowboy Bob Orton came to the ring. Piper takes the award, kind of goes back and forth with Captain Lou, smashes the record over Captain Lou's head, pushes Cyndi Lauper. She goes down. He kind of kicks her. He always said he kicked her in the face. He just kind of shrugged her off, really, but she sold it. She flew. She went nuts. And body slammed her manager, David Wolfe. And what that basically did, and if you go back and watch it on YouTube, I highly recommend it. The crowd, it's nuclear heat. The crowd goes nuts. And it set all of momentum for the first WrestleMania, because all of a sudden you had Hulk Hogan, who ran out to make the save against the ultimate villain in Roddy Piper. You had Cyndi Lauper and you had Wendy Richter as the huge babyface. That one day in December of 1984 completely set the stage for the very first WrestleMania, and look at what WrestleMania has grown to become. So that was kind of the beginning of WrestleMania.
I love that story.
Okay, good. Number two, you'll probably remember a little bit better because you weren't 9 months old. You were a little bit older. December 18th, 1995.
Okay, so I was like 11 at that time.
11, okay. So you might have watched this. Probably. What this one was WCW Monday Nitro. Mm-hmm. About 5 days after being released from her contract, Alundra Blaze, Medusa Miceli, shows up in WCW. Basically, and you know the story, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know Medusa and you've met her. She was let go by WWF. They didn't have anything for her. And Eric Bischoff called, said, "Hey, do you still have the title belt by chance?" She said that she did, but she had to give it back to Vince. He said, yeah. "How about you come down and bring the belt with you?" So as we mentioned in the book, Sisterhood of the Squared Circle, she shows up at Nitro that night with the belt, not knowing what they wanted to do. Bischoff says, "Here's what we'd like to do. We'd like you to come out and drop it in the trash can." And real quick, this is what she had to say to that. I have a copy here, Sisterhood of the Squared Circle, The Complete History of Women's Pro Wrestling. She basically says, okay, here we go. "I brought the belt not knowing what was going to happen. And then he came in and said, 'Hey, Deuce, where's that belt?' I said, 'I got it, but I've got to give it back.' 'Well, how about you throwing that title in the trash tonight live on TV? Just so I get it back, I need to get it to Vince. That's all I was thinking. I wasn't thinking I was going to make this all the shit that happened. I never thought it would blow up the way it did. And I was kind of hurt that I was one of the first to go because I worked so hard, being let go from the WWF. I love my job in wrestling. So I said, 'Yeah, I can do that just so long as I get it back. It's probably no big deal.' I thought, 'God, this is going to be a great angle. People are going to love this. People are going to talk about it.' And they did. It's still considered as one of the opening salvos in the Monday Night Wars. It wasn't really until 2015, when Medusa was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, that everything was patched up. There was some severe bad blood between her and Vince McMahon and the WWE after that. But it was this kind of turning point. And ironically enough, they brought in Medusa for the new women's division in WCW and never built a women's division around her. About 6 months afterwards, she was back to being a valet. There was really no one challenging for the title, and it was eventually just kind of scrapped and never referred to again.
I love her so very much. Like, it's crazy. Like, I've told this story, I think, on Allison Danger's podcast, like with Medusa. Like, oh, like there's Sensational Sherry and then there's Medusa for me. That's like my one and two. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, Trish Stratus, Lita. I'm like, yeah, they're three and four or five down the line. But there's, you have no Sensational Sherry, or you have no Lita and Trish without Sensational Sherry and without Medusa. Like, those are two hands down. Wrestling, everything. Of course, you can go above that and say, you know, Mula and Mae Young and all that too. But more my era, those two are like the its for me.
You could never have Lita or Trish or anybody that's come after if it wasn't for Sensational Sherry and Medusa, especially because at that time in the 80s, there was really a thought that, you know, women's wrestling could never sell, it could never work. And they faced a lot of challenges politically with the boys, with the travel, and they really kind of rose above it and they left an indelible mark on the business. So yeah, you're right. It wouldn't, there would be no Trish or Knockouts or Divas or anything afterwards if it weren't for the two of them and the ones who came before them.
And, you know, it's so funny. I don't know, probably a month or two ago, Medusa actually posted a shoot promo, I guess it was, between her and Sensational Sherry on her Twitter. And I was just like, this is fantastic. Because I had never seen it. And it was so good. Because she's like, you know, basically saying Sensational Sherry was sleeping around and that's how she was getting her power and how it was shit and all this. And I was just like,
yeah, it was a pipe bomb before there were pipe bombs.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, man. That's such a great piece of history. And I mean, when she came back to WWE for the Hall of Fame, I mean, they even put the title in the trash can on the T-shirt. I actually have that shirt upstairs.
That's it. And yeah. She gave a speech and she kind of brought it all back. And she mentions this. We have it quoted in the book, which I co-wrote it with Pat LaPrade. So that's why I say we. But says that, you know, she brought the belt out of the garbage can at the Hall of Fame and said it's back where it belongs here in the WWE. So yeah, it was the way of kind of coming full circle on that. But at the time she did the angle, went along with it, never realizing how big of a deal it would be. And it's really been the one moment that defined her career.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, her and Bull Nakano are like iconic to me, and I hope that, you know, more people that especially got into wrestling later, maybe the Attitude Era and so on, go back and see some of their fights, because amazing. And, you know, it's sad that this kind of overshadows her actual wrestling career, because like you said, in WCW, they didn't actually do anything with it after the fact. Yep. So definitely go check out Medusa and Bull Nakano.
Bull Nakano and Medusa, and you can also check out the Alundra Blaze Survivor Series match. Aja Kong, I believe, was in that, Bull Nakano, a few others. That match, as you just watched the spots, it was literally 10, 15, 20 years ahead of what the guys were doing. And it holds up so well today because it looks like wrestling in 2020 back in 1993, 94. Mm-hmm. And when you compare what the guys were doing to what the women were doing, they were just blowing them out of the water. The fans really didn't even know how to react to it.
Well, I mean, to me, I know a lot of Dave Prazak will say a lot of the inspiration for Shimmer was Sensational Sherry, but I also think you have to throw Medusa in there because she was doing American Joshi style before anybody else, really.
Yeah. Yeah. She popularized. In fact, that was her thing with the WF was once she got her push, she wanted to bring in all of the Japanese girls she had worked with because she didn't think that anyone in the US could kind of hang with her, to be perfectly honest. Yeah.
I don't think anybody at that time could either.
It angered a lot of people at the time. It did not make Alundra Blaze or Medusa popular at the time because there were a lot of women who thought that they got passed over for spots because Alundra wanted to work with the Japanese girls. But you look at the quality of the matches that they had, and they were fantastic, even if it wasn't really highly pushed by the WWF at the time.
Yeah, it's so great to have like the WWE Network and YouTube to go back and check out some of these amazing matches and amazing moments in wrestling history that, you know, say 10 years ago, we weren't able to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to be honest, I much prefer doing that than watching the current product.
Some things, definitely. I agree with you on that. Some of the things I'm like, oh, okay. But other things I'm like, right now they're doing great too. So it's just hard without a crowd, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Very much. So.
All right, Dan. Well, thank you so much. I could talk about Alundra Blaze or Medusa all night long because, like I said, she's my number two. But thank you. I appreciate it. And you know what? I look forward to your history lesson in 2021.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Again, Sisterhood of the Squared Circle, The Thing in the River. Check it out, guys. They make great stocking stuffers. And I'll see you in 2021. Hopefully, it will be a much better year than 2020.
Let's hope with that fresh restart everybody so desperately needs at this point. All right, guys. Absolutely. Happy holidays. Until next time.
This is Matt Hardy, and you are listening to the VOC Nation.
Rock and Roll Union for the past 2 years has been the place for rock and roll, new rock and roll, debuting rock and roll, and some of the old classics as well. We have welcomed guests from around the world, national artists, and more. We have excited many people by our live events. We've welcomed everybody into the fold, and we continue to do so on a weekly basis. Guys, that is Rock and Roll Union, and that is what we do for you.
Saturdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, VOCNation.com.
Since 2012, HIAC Talk Radio has been bringing you the best of independent wrestling and wrestling on the worldwide scale with interviews and other segments now featuring The Wrestling Historian with Craig Ligon. Every Thursday night at 6 p.m. at VOCNation.com, or go to your Android or iPhone and type in VOC Nation Radio Network and subscribe to the greatest wrestling podcast network in the world. Listen to HIAC Wrestling Podcast today.
VOC Nation provides live daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with the hosts and guests by phone call, email, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include the legendary Ken Resnick, you probably remember from the AWA and WWE, former WCW performer The Maestro, Wes Briscoe, who you probably remember from Impact, Brady Hicks, who you remember from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, and former Philly radio personality Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern, and of course, In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. And by the way, both of these shows take callers live during the show. What are you waiting for? Go listen live right now at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all of our podcasts by searching for VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. Oh, and follow them on Twitter, too, at VOC Nation.
Hola, this is your amiga, Shelly from Cali, to let you know you can catch me here on VOC Nation for Shelly Live. You never know what the hell I'm going to be talking about. Sometimes I have guests. Sometimes I let you on in the cheese mess, spill a little tea. Sometimes I cry. You have to tune in to find out why. And I also take your calls. I love chatting with you guys and seeing what the hell you guys are thinking. So meet me here on the VOC Nation. Be there or be square.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.